Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. The Citizens Task Force examining what to do about the airport in Kansas City is finally out with its recommendations a year after Mayor Sly James appointed the 24-member group. We'll find out what the panel's recommendations for KCI are later on this hour. But first up today, the story of Brian Banks. Brian Banks was a high school football star who was pegged for a full-ride scholarship at USC. His aspirations were shattered when a fellow student falsely accused him of rape. Banks ended up serving 5 years in prison and was forced to register as a sex offender. Banks' accuser eventually contacted him on Facebook and admitted that she had lied. Banks wound up being exonerated. Since then, he's returned to football, getting signed by the Atlanta Falcons last year, but was finally cut from the team. He's now working with innocence projects across the country, and that brings him to Kansas City today. And Brian Banks, former NFL player and motivational speaker, so good to have you here.
Steve, that was awesome. Thank you.
How am I doing?
That was perfect.
Okay, good. So, Brian, you're a 16-year-old kid. You've got this scholarship to play college football at USC, no less, and suddenly you're accused of rape. What were you thinking?
I was in complete shock and just fear. 16, I really didn't even fully understand what rape was, what it was about, and how I was being accused of it. I was on my way to my senior year in high school. It was the biggest year for me because I had just verbally committed to USC on a full scholarship. And so my life was on the up and up, I would say, and just, you know, where I wanted to be and what my passions were.
And you found out about this how? How did you get the word?
Everything happened in the same day. I ran into a classmate of mine, a schoolmate of mine that she and I had gone to school in middle school together as well as in high school for a year, and we bumped into each other on campus, engaged in small talk, and that small talk led to us agreeing to go to an area on our campus known as a makeout spot. We made out, but we never had sex. And by the end of that day, I was being arrested and accused of kidnapping and rape.
So she had gone to the police and said that Brian Banks has just raped me.
Right.
And the whole arrest was just based on her allegation and her allegation alone.
Yeah, it was just all in her word, even though a lot of her word would suggest that there would be some type of DNA or physical evidence. Mm-hmm. There was no DNA. There was no physical evidence. I still was pursued regardless, just all based off of her word.
So it was simply her word against your word.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a trial. What happened next?
I had fought this case for an entire year, being transferred from juvenile court to adult court. They felt that the case was too severe for juvenile court. Once in adult court, I began facing 41 years to life in prison at the age of 17. And a year had gone by fighting this case, and I got to a point to where I was selecting my jury for a trial. On the day of jury selection, my attorney came back behind the scenes where I was in a holding cell waiting to see a judge, and sat me down in an interview room and told me that she had just come up with this amazing deal with the district attorney, and that was that if I plead no contest to one count of rape, I'd undergo what's called a 90-day diagnostic or a 90-day observation, where I'd go to Chino State Prison, and during that 90-day sentence, I'd be interviewed by a psychologist and counselor, and they would determine on a ladder system whether I receive probation, 3 years, or 6 years in prison. And my lawyer looked at me and promised me and guaranteed me that I would get probation if I took the deal.
You would get probation.
That I would.
Mm-hmm.
And said, you know, I guarantee you, you'll get probation. At the most, you'll receive a 3-year sentence. You have a year time served already. You only do about 18 more months and get out of prison, and you can still move on with your life and play football, and you'll still be young. But if you don't take this deal and you walk into this courtroom to select this jury, as soon as you walk in there, this jury that's more than likely going to be an all-white jury will see you guilty because you're a big black teenager. Hmm. And so I was left with, to this day, at the age of 28, the hardest decision I've ever made in my entire life. Do I plead no contest to a crime that I didn't commit and serve a minor sentence? Or do I walk into a courtroom and risk my entire life fighting against a charge that I didn't do?
You took the deal.
17 years old, I just wanted to be free and wanted to go home. I had been in jail for a year for something I didn't do. I just wanted to go home. So I took the deal.
And you found out at what point that the deal wasn't everything it was cracked up to be?
After the 90-day observation, I took the deal, went to Chino and served 90 days. I received a favorable report from the psychologist and counselor. They felt that I was in jail for something I didn't do. They got it. And when I finished the 90 days and stood in front of a judge for sentencing, he sentenced me to the high term of 6 years anyway. No explanation, no reasoning. It was as if he was in a drive-thru at a fast food restaurant ordering something and driving away. And there I was to serve another or an additional 4 years and 2 months upon the year that I had already served.
So the notion of playing high school football as a senior, that idea was long gone at that point.
Yeah, I had to let it go.
You lost your senior year.
I lost my senior year. I lost the scholarship offers, the recruiting, graduation with my friends, prom, all that good stuff. The fundamental stages of adulthood. You know, I spent 6 birthdays behind bars.
Did you ever reach out to your accuser and say, hey, what's up? I'm in prison based on what you just said.
No, I never made any attempts to reach out. I knew that it was a violation on my end to make contact with her.
You can't do that.
Couldn't do it. But that's pretty much how the exoneration came about. I was at home online searching for a job and noticed that I had a friend request on Facebook. I clicked on this friend request and it was the girl who had accused me of raping her 9 years ago. This is 4 years after prison. I was home on parole, strict custody parole, wearing a GPS on my ankle.
Meaning you can't leave the house.
Well, I could leave the house, but I had a curfew. I couldn't leave Los Angeles County under any circumstances. I couldn't leave the state under any circumstance. It was impossible to find work. I was a registered sex offender for the rest of my life.
So wait a minute. So you're sitting at your computer and you're looking at Facebook and you get a friend request. You click on it and it's the woman who had accused you of rape.
9 years later.
And she said, what? Did she send you a note?
Yeah. Well, she sent the friend request and I did not accept.
Really? Really? tough call?
Right.
Yeah.
Instead, I sent her a private message and I asked her simply, why would you friend request me? And her response was, I was hoping that we could allow bygones to be bygones.
Oh, my God.
I was immature back in the day, but I can assure you that I'm much more mature now. And I really didn't know what to take of it. And so I asked, would she call me? I left a number. And right away, the phone rang, and it was her. And that was an interesting phone call. She was really adamant about wanting to hang out and reconnect, and as if nothing had ever happened. And it just...
It's just breathtaking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you, Brian, how did you move the conversation around to the central question of, hey, you wrongly accused me and cost me so dearly here?
Yeah. Well, I explained to her exactly that. I said, you know, if you, you know, maybe we can get to some point to where we can meet face to face and talk. But I want you to know that I want you to help me get my life back because your lies caused so much damage, not only for me, but for my family as well. And so she basically said, if I would hang out with her, then maybe she'd think about helping me. It became really... It was a really crazy situation that led to the two of us meeting at an office that was actually a private investigation firm. I had reached out to a friend of mine whose dad had recently become a private investigator.
Yeah.
And I said, I made the decision. I'm going to meet with this girl because here may be an opportunity for me to shed the light on what actually happened on July 8th, 2002. And so I reached out to him and said, I'm going to meet with this girl, but if I do it, I want to make sure that everything's recorded in the event that I violate my parole and I'm sitting back to jail for it.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to know what exactly happened.
What was it? Was it legal for you to meet with her even at that point once you're on parole?
No. It would have been a violation of my parole. Luckily, my parole conditions state that I couldn't come in contact with the supposed victim unless it was for reasons that had to do with court purposes. And so therefore that made that ultimately kept me from being violated.
So that exception allowed this to happen.
Yeah.
And so when you met her in the office, was she aware that you were going to record this thing and try to work it out?
No, she wasn't aware. She just wanted, to like go out and have dinner and all these other things. And, you know, I think she was so adamant about wanting to see me that when she came into this office, she didn't even see the signs on the walls that said that this place is being monitored and recorded. She completely was unaware of it.
Was her conscience bothering her?
I doubt that. I think she just wanted to prove that she was cool enough to be around again. I really think it was all for selfish reasons, not to necessarily help me in any kind of way. There was never an apology or anything.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to just an unbelievable story involving Brian Banks, a former high school football star who's played briefly in the NFL. He was falsely accused of rape. He's here on behalf of the Midwest Innocence Project and Big Banquet tonight. I'll give some more information about that in just a minute here. But this is just an unbelievable story to me. So you're sitting down in the office and the conversation begins. And how did you wind around again to the point of, hey, this whole thing wasn't real?
She actually showed up 2 days in a row. And the first day that she came, the investigator sat in the other room and monitored everything via the screens. Mm-hmm. And she and I sat in the office, and I wanted to convey to her what her lies caused. The life that I lived for the last 9 years.
9 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she was, she had no cares. It was,
She could care less.
She could care less. She was more worried about herself and the things that she had to experience. She, her mother and her decided to sue the school district for lack of security on campus shortly after I was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
The school district chose not to fight it, and she was awarded $1.5 million for it.
Yeah.
She split that $1.5 million 50-50 with her civil attorneys.
And so she knew then if she came clean with you, she was on the hook for that money.
It would affect the money. And she even, you know, made a lot of comments about, you know, all right, you know, well, after our first meeting together, I said, I want you to come back and I want to speak to an investigator who can advise us on what to do next in order to fix these issues. And she agreed.
Because she didn't admit on the first day that this whole thing had been a lie.
I never asked her the direct questions of why you lied or anything. I just wanted to converse at that point.
But I'm sure you're just dying inside, though. You want to get to that question,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But you held off.
Right.
So day two, the next day, she comes back again.
And then she's interviewed by the investigator himself.
Oh, really?
And
she agreed to that.
Right. And that's when he proceeded to ask her the direct questions of, did he kidnap you and did he rape you? And she laughed and said, of course not. If he raped me, I wouldn't even be here now. We were just young and curious and having fun. And the next thing you know, all of these adults got involved. And she pretty much just pawned it off on other people.
And when she said that, that must have been an amazing moment for you, Brian.
I sat there and everything else was just a blur. I'm just, all I could think of is, I got it. It's on tape. And I just wanted to run out of there. I took that tape to every attorney that I could find via the internet and pled for help. And it was difficult in the beginning. Even with this crazy evidence that I had in my hands, the overall response that I got back from attorneys were that they weren't familiar with post-conviction petitions or habeas petitions or what to do with this type of evidence.
Yeah.
So it was the first few days, it was as if I wouldn't get the proper help. And then I reached out to the California Innocence Project in San Diego.
Ah, how'd you even know about them?
Word of mouth in prison.
Ah, okay.
Everybody, it's definitely a project that's talked about. And I later learned that all projects are pretty much talked about throughout the prison system. It's,
mm-hmm.
Noted for what they do. But I reached out to the Innocence Project in California and pled to them to take on my case. And normally, innocent projects, they only take on projects, cases where men or women are still incarcerated.
And at that point, you're not. Yeah.
I'm on parole. I'm mm-hmm. home. But I explained to them every single day that I wear this GPS on my ankle, every single day that I'm on parole, every single day that I register register as a sex offender, and going on with every other thing that I was going through. Every day that I lived that life, I am forever incarcerated. I'm forever in prison. I may not be behind bars, but I'm still very much institutionalized.
And you sold them.
And they got it. With that and with the blatant proof, I popped open the laptop and showed them this video.
Oh, it was an actual videotape of her making the confession. Yeah.
It was undeniable.
Yeah. And so then what happened? They went through the proceedings and...
It took an entire year.
It took a year even at that point.
Which is really short for appeals.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As crazy as that may sound, that's a speedy process.
And the wind-up here, just from reading about this, is your accuser had to pay back a whole bunch of money.
She now owes $2.6 million between the school district and the courts for different reasons. So, but I mean, they'll never see that money
because she
doesn't have any money.
Mm-hmm. Are you still Facebook friends with her?
We never were Facebook friends. I never accepted.
You never accepted it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an incredible story. That is just amazing to me. Take me back, and tell me what it's like that first night that you're in prison. And you're there, you're 17 or 18 at that point, and you know in your heart you're innocent, you're seeing your life go up in smoke, your senior year is gone, your senior year of football, which is the big year. Mm-hmm. I was a high school football player, not quite as big as you, but I was okay. But that's all going up in smoke, and you're there on that first night, mm-hmm. and you're thinking, what?
Where am I? And what's going on? Why? I didn't sleep the first night. The first 2 weeks of incarceration, I lost 14 pounds. I wasn't interacting with people. I wasn't talking to people. I was just there, but not there. And I spent the first few years of incarceration very angry and very, depressed and vengeful.
I wanted people to
be held accountable for what had been done to me.
But the problem is, and again, I'm an old cop reporter, so I know a little bit about this, but everyone that you're with in prison, tell me if I'm wrong, but everyone or most everybody says, hey, I'm innocent too. Mm-hmm. Oh, you tell me your story. Sure, I'm innocent too. Everybody's innocent, right? Everybody got jacked up. Everybody's in the wrong place at the wrong time, but mm-hmm. didn't do anything wrong, mm-hmm. right?
To a certain degree, you're right. You get guys who say that. And from face value, you can't judge a situation either way. You can't say a person's guilty or innocent by just looking at something face value. But that's when it comes down to just the facts. If mm-hmm. if people would take the time to investigate these cases properly, to do a thorough investigation and really dig deep into what actually happened, it was. Clearest day that none of this should have taken place.
So why did it? I mean, I wasn't aware that you could be sent to prison as a 16-year-old or a perpetrator at 16, alleged perpetrator, and then, go off when you're 17 without any physical proof mm-hmm. at all that something as heinous as a rape had occurred.
Yeah. It's a system that is, I always say we have a very huge, vast, amazing system of America, but within something so big, we're going to have problems. We're going to have flaws. We're going to have misjudgments and so forth. It's disappointing that, things like this happen.
Was there anything else she was able to hang this case on beyond the fact that, that Brian Banks did this to me? End of story. Was it just that simple?
Yeah. It was that
he
simple.
He did it. It happened. Yeah.
My attorney at the time wanted no more than for me to plead out to some type of deal.
Get this thing off his plate.
My mom paid for this attorney. She sold her house, sold her car to pay for this lawyer. And from day one, this lawyer just wanted me to plead out.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that day of me having to take that deal, I had even asked, can I speak to my mom to make this decision? And I was denied that. I was told that I was an adult court, and so I had to make an adult decision on my own. Was left with 10 minutes to sit there and think about that plea bargain.
10 minutes.
And that's the thing is you know, right now in America, 97% of all cases right now are being played out in some form. Only 3%, at the most 5% of cases, actually see a trial setting.
Because it takes time. It takes money. And the justice system isn't really doesn't want to go there unless it's got to go there.
It's easier for a district attorney to get someone to plea out to something versus take them through a whole trial process.
Yeah. And that needs to change, I gather, is what you're saying.
Of course, because even if you're innocent, if there's a way that they can still get you to plead to some lower charge,
yeah,
then they'll do that.
Yeah. I've been late in putting out our phone number. I'll put it out very quickly. We just have a few minutes left in this segment. 816-235-2888 is our number here again. 816-235-2888. And I should point out that Brian Banks is in town for the Faces of Innocence, a dinner and a silent auction tonight being put on by the Midwest Innocence Project, the Kansas City Metropolitan Bar Association, and the UMKC Law School. For more information, just go to themip.org. Again, T-H-E, the M-I-P for Midwest Innocence Project. .org for more information about tonight's dinner. Let's fast forward here a little bit, Brian. Again, I'm just so taken with the story. You got out, and then it wasn't long before you got a phone call from some friends in the NFL, the Seattle Seahawks, I think, mm-hmm, to be precise. Who called you, and how did you feel about it?
I walked out of the courtroom a free man, May 24th, 2012, and made an announcement to cameras outside that I wanted to play football. I had been training while they'd been fighting my case.
And you had been in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
You looked pretty good.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the following day after making that announcement, my phone rang, and it was Coach Carroll asking me, was this the right number to a linebacker? And I said, yeah, you got the right number.
So wait, it's Pete Carroll, the head coach, who just won the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl winning Seattle Seahawks, mm-hmm, is on the line personally saying, come try out for me?
Yeah. He said, you know, I know this is a long shot. I'm not sure what you're able to do. It's been 10 years, but I knew I recruited you back in high school, and I knew you can do then.
Oh, he was the coach at USC then, of course, yeah, who mm-hmm. recruited you to come
play for the Trojans. So here we are again,
yeah,
together, picking up where we left off. And he flies me out to Seattle. I try out, and they were highly impressed at what they saw.
Really? Really?
They invited me back for camp. I attended camp, and they chose not to sign me at that time. Mm-hmm. I said that, you know, I still need a little bit more work. And so mm-hmm. I went and played in the UFL in Vegas for the Las Vegas Locomotives. That season ended halfway through. They had money problems. And I went back and trained more and tried out for about 5 other NFL teams before landing a spot with the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah. And you played for them for how long?
I got a chance to play 4 games with the Atlanta Falcons before they released me.
Well, how was it playing in the NFL for you after having been away but dreaming about it, I'm sure, in prison? Mm-hmm. You played high school ball, but you skip college, you go right to the NFL. Everyone says the game is so fast. Was it fast?
Not necessarily fast physically. It's fast mentally. You got to be ready for the play checks, you know, the different formations and how things can switch all in an instant. So it's definitely fast in that form, but there is no feeling like running out of a tunnel and flames and smoke in the air and the crowd cheering. And, you know, it's addicting. It really is. It's an amazing feeling. And to have gone through everything I've gone through over 10 years and not only missed college, but I didn't even play my senior year in high school. And I played 4 games in the NFL.
You made some tackles. You did your thing.
I did. Yeah.
Did this is a cheap question, but did that moment running out, you know, of the tunnel, maybe the first time for the Falcons, did it in some way begin to make up for what you had lost? Was there a moment of euphoria that you thought, you know, it helped pay it back a little bit?
The work that I put into making that happen, the endless amount of training, the mental preparation, the faith in God that I had and His help.
Yeah.
I mean, all these different things are what I appreciate and value towards getting me where I got. But it doesn't make up for the injustice.
Sure.
And that's why I'm here in Kansas now, to make noise about people who are in similar situations or have been in similar situations of being wrongfully accused of crimes that they didn't do and being convicted in prison for them. It's unacceptable.
Is the NFL career history, or are you still thinking about it?
I have not pursued the NFL this season. If I got a call, I'd be ready.
Mm-hmm.
I recently signed a feature film deal. There's going to be a movie made about my life and my story.
Good for you.
I'm working on an amazing documentary. I am in school right now to receive my certification as a life coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm traveling around throughout the nation.
Giving
speeches from motivational to education in regards to wrongful convictions. Helping other organizations with fundraising and awareness, raising awareness. This has become my passion. And that's turning my life into a more communal standpoint versus me being personal and just pursuing something for me.
Good for you.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you for sharing your story with us today. What a great story.
Yeah.
It needs to be told, doesn't it?
Agreed. And not only just for me, but for the countless others, the people who are behind bars and their families that miss them and the people who are fighting to bring them home. This is why the story needs to be told.
Wow. Great story. Brian Banks, again, former NFL player. He's a motivational speaker. Now he'll be speaking tonight as part of the Faces of Innocence Dinner and Silent Auction being put on by the Midwest Innocence Project, as well as the Bar Association and the UMKC Law School. Again, for more information about this big event, themip.org is the place to go for more information. I really enjoyed having you, Brian. I wish
Thank
you all
brother.
The best of luck, man.
Thank you so much.
You bet.